Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
I've got a frog in my throat.
What's its name?
Terry.
There it is. What episode are we up to?
24.
Ooh, welcome to episode 24, Tom. I've brought a special guest in to celebrate the 24thness of it all. It's Abe.
Woo!
Thank you.
How
welcome.
Are you going, Abe?
Welcome. I like that you brought me in the same age as I am currently.
Yeah, exactly. The 24-year-old that we know, Abe.
It's me. Thanks for having me.
We've got a lot to talk about, and I don't know if we're all going to be able to get through everything, so maybe we should just rapid fire some stuff. Should we crack on into some news?
Yeah, I think
I've found some news.
Start with the fresh news.
All right. The freshest fresh news that I could find was, this will make Abe sad.
Oh, great.
Because of your Star Wars t-shirt. Yes.
What a way to start.
So, Avengers Welcome. Infinity War is now the biggest opening ever globally with 630 million. That's about 100 million more than Force Awakens got.
And that's without China.
Oh, is that without China?
Yep. Doesn't open in China until May 11th.
Crikey. All
so
right.
That's something like the third or fourth biggest market that the Marvel
that's
movies
huge.
Have.
That's huge.
Yeah, so.
Because I thought previously, wasn't it Deadpool was the biggest opener, then Black Panther and now Avengers, is that right?
I think in terms of superhero movies, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you include it broader out, Star Wars was... I mean, it's Disney taking from Disney.
Yeah.
They're also winning.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of debate going on through the weekend because Disney are very conservative when they put out their estimates. And part of their estimate on Sunday morning, they thought they were going to make $249 million, which would put it $600,000 less than Force Awakens. And then... Maybe that motivated some more people, or maybe it's just doing better than they really expected, because when the figures came out, I think it was 262, somewhere around there. So it was resounding.
It's huge. It's a huge amount of money. I want some of that. And I guess other people do, because I remember you, Tom, last week were talking about how James Cameron started to talk about superheroes and Marvel and how, you know, everybody should get over it and that Avatar's probably way cooler. He's still going on about it this week. He's still going on.
You know why he's in the news?
Why?
His new show starts today. He has a new TV show called James Cameron's Story of Science Fiction.
Is that sort of the history of?
It's history and it's, you know, like him doing interviews with Sigourney Weaver, Spielberg, Christopher Nolan.
Oh, yeah.
I think J.J. Abrams might be in the mix. People
so
that are considered luminaries.
So he's interviewing
them. They're talking about where genres began, where these stories come from in terms of literary influences and this sort of stuff. Sounds very interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I'll watch it tonight.
Even with James Cameron there?
He's going to be like an old man shaking a fist, get off my lawn. You know.
Yeah.
It'll be difficult, but I enjoy the subject matter and the other people appearing, so I think I'll be able to get past James Cameron.
Unless
he makes me sit in a submarine.
He can't make you do anything you don't want to do.
He seems to be able to do whatever he wants. I think he's got the power.
You could, of course, start a drinking game, just as a thought. I mean, you could start a drinking game and see how many times they mention or show clips of Avatar during this series.
Oh.
Right?
I think I get pretty drunk.
Yeah.
First episode, lots of blue people, more than the Smurfs.
What was your take on Avatar? Just because I think we're both aware of each other's takes on your Avatar. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, not a fan.
No,
not
correct.
A fan. I mean, look, the thing is, like, it's an interesting idea. I get the idea, you know, like you're kind of trying to do this take on colonialism. Mm-hmm. I understand. And the fact that it could potentially go into the Aliens universe, which is kind of interesting.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Like that. That's kind of cool. You know, an alternate planet that Earth's gone to. I get that. But the execution was poor.
Mm-hmm.
Poor. I mean, the character development was terrible. And the things happened that shouldn't have really happened. And why was this going on? And the action for a James Cameron film was pretty poor.
Yeah. And there was that whole putting bits in animal tails.
I think I blocked some of this out.
Yeah. Do you remember that? The connecting?
Yeah, I do. I blocked that out until
I think the term
you mentioned
is docking.
It again. That's a technical term.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's go with that.
Sounds uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, I hope with all his other Avatar sequels that we won't have to see any more of that. We probably will.
Speaking of which, I'm saying it now. You heard it. No more James Cameron talk this week.
Cool. Done.
Be gone, James.
Over and done with. Now, this is not necessarily a movie or TV news story. I just thought it was interesting because I'm sure that, like many people in the universe these days, you can suffer from a bit of anxiety, right?
Yes.
I'm going to put my hand up. Anxiety? Yeah, anxiety. There's a uni over in Utah in the United States of the Americas. They've got a crying closet. They've designed a crying closet
and it sits
in the library. Yeah. So you can go in there and you can just have your little cry. It's all in the lead up to their exam period. You can go in there, have a cry, 10-minute max, out again, feel better. That's the theory, right? But I saw the photograph as well. The photograph of the crying closet, it's right out in the middle of a room, I gather, where everybody can see you go in there. Now, if someone with anxiety wants to go and have an anxiety attack or a cry attack, they don't want people to know. You're not going to go walk into the middle of a crying closet whilst everybody else looks. And what happens if you walk out and there's a line and they're like, she was having a cry.
And what happens if you've gone in there because you're so conflicted about your sexual orientation, then you've got to literally come out of the closet in order to leave that situation? That's not fair. Awkward.
You just can't win.
No.
You just can't win. So that was my new story about non-film or TV. I just thought it was interesting.
Well, you could tie it into David Fincher's Panic Room.
Done. Ooh. Thank you very much.
I mean, you know, there you go. There's a link.
Yeah.
Segway.
Good
and then
work.
During school holidays, they could have like an escape room. Have the flip, make some money out of it.
So either the parents could hide in there or the kids can be shut in there. One or the other. I'm not too sure about this 10-minute time limit.
Yeah,
like,
why
if you're
10
really
minutes?
Having a problem and you're really having an anxiety issue, do you really want to limit someone to like 10 minutes? That seems a bit unfair.
That's going to give you more anxiety because the clock's ticking.
Yeah, and it's like one of those public toilets where like the door's just flying open.
Yeah, don't want that.
Because, you know, you could be there huddled, fetal position. You know, you look up.
I don't want that. I think they need to rework this whole idea. I don't have any solutions at this point in time.
In a world that time forgot, we are the Watchers.
Tom, you got any news stories?
Look, I do. I've been following very closely some of the information about new show, like pilots that are currently being written or filmed for starting in September, later in the year, the upcoming stuff.
Yep.
A lot of it's very, very early stages, so I'm not sure who's starring and this sort of stuff, but there is one show that's a big deal being put together. It is called LA's Finest. I'm just going to say all the words together because individually they sound all right, but together you're like, okay. It's called LA's Finest, and it stars Gabrielle Union and Jessica Alba, and it's a spin-off of Bad Boys.
Oh,
wow.
So it'll be like Bad Girls. It's the production team behind it seem like they've got some pretty good big budget values to be working with.
Okay.
So it could be very polished. I'm hoping it will be in the vein of, I don't know if you've seen Lethal Weapon TV show?
Yeah, I have.
It's cheesy good fun.
Yeah, it is.
If they make a show like that with Jessica Alba and Gabrielle Union, I'll be there each week.
Yeah, but really, we've seen Jessica Alba do this before when she did Alias.
Sure.
And that wasn't fantastic, but we've seen Gabrielle Union, like, she can kick some ass.
Yeah,
she would be
stuff.
Fantastic in that. She'd be really good. She's awesome.
Wasn't she in, is it called Bring It On?
Yes.
The cheerleading movie?
Yes, she was.
She was from Compton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Stole the moves.
Yeah, she did. Well,
no,
yeah,
the
she
moves
had them
were stolen from her.
Yeah, from her. That's right.
It's a great film.
I watched that. So that came out the day I finished school, right?
Right.
And there was nothing else on at the cinema, and I went and saw it every day for 4 days in a row.
Wow, that's just... It was the first Blu-ray I ever bought.
Really?
Let's Bring It
Fair.
On. Yeah.
Fair.
It's a great film. And if you look at it now, there's a whole lot of interesting conversations about race and privilege and all that stuff in this movie that's how old now? I mean, I don't know.
2001 or 2000 even, somewhere around there.
Yeah. It's super old. Well, not super old because, you know, we're young and funky. But,
yeah, really funky. You're 24.
But anyway, it's interesting to see that in that film. And it's stuff that we're really only talking about in the last couple of years.
And it's also got a hell of a lot of references that people still use today.
Yes.
And probably don't even know that it's from that movie. I don't remember Gabrielle Union anything else, though, off the top of my head.
She's always been a very good supportive player.
And she's quite serious and assertive?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The other piece of news, and this is kind of fucked up, but fun, at a screening of Peter Rabbit in Perth the other day. I know, what a way to start. They accidentally showed a trailer for the wrong film beforehand. There's an upcoming very hard R-rated horror film starring Toni Collette called Hereditary.
Oh, no.
And apparently parents were screaming for the projectionist to stop, hands over eyes,
wow,
covering ears, trying to shield their children.
That's what so a cool. nightmare. And what a lot of and then, free tickets
and
they would
have
had to give
those poor
away.
Kids had to put up with an hour and a half of James Corden voicing a rabbit.
It was the worst day ever. Mm. Oh, that is awkward. I mean, who would be more upset about it, the parents or the kids?
I think the kids would be rapt until I got home and went to sleep. Yeah. Then they wouldn't be so rapt.
No, that would be when the problem happens.
But wouldn't it be incredible if this started like... Obviously a small generation, but a generation of, like, horror lovers.
Oh, yeah.
Kids, I mean, think of, if we still had DVD stores, these would be the kids who'd be like, oh, I saw that trailer, wonder what the horror section is like, and walk into the horror section.
They don't make Goosebumps books and stuff anymore. You know, no. There's not that young teen or even tween horror scene that there was when we were younger.
Mm. Well, not that. Abe, because he missed it all because he was only 24.
You would have been enjoying...
Teletubbies?
Oh, I was going to go, what are they called? Something and Drake, those twins on Nickelodeon. They worked on a boat.
Oh, yeah.
The Sprouse twins. One of them is now on Riverdale.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I'm not too sure this whole story of me being 24 is going to last long,
okay.
Is it?
Okay.
Because I'm confused already.
Yeah, there's silence from your end of the desk already.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Hannah Montana.
Yeah, geez, hasn't she changed a lot? You know? Yeah.
She's gone through her moments.
Puberty really was... Yeah.
Yep.
Smacked her.
Yeah, and so did her publicity team.
She
Stick
likes
your tongue out in every single photograph, please.
She likes hanging out with the Flaming Lips now.
Does she?
Yeah, she and Wayne Coyne have written a lot of music together.
At least someone does.
Yeah, there's always someone. There's always someone. Abe, if you have been searching the internet machine for anything...
Really the only thing that I saw, like, that... There was two things I saw that were kind of exciting this week. One was a new Star Wars animated TV series.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which I thought that could be kind of cool.
Yep.
Did you guys like the Star Wars animated series at all?
Look, I've not kept up with them. I've always been one that I go and binge a series at a time,
yeah,
stuff
totally.
Like that. But they've been very enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah.
Filling in blanks and stuff.
I've watched bits and pieces. Mm. I haven't been an avid fan, but sure. Every time I've watched it, I've gone, yeah, happy with this.
Yeah,
very happy.
Personally, I was not a fan of Star Wars Rebels. I thought it was just a bit too kiddie.
Sure.
It was weird. Like, it was kind of kiddie, but with lots of violence, which was a bit odd. But the series before that was quite good. So it'd be interesting to see how this one goes. A little bit of the people have been working on it. The artists have put a little bit of preliminary art on Twitter, if you follow them and have a look. So a little bit of stuff out there. So this one takes place in the current universe we're investigating now, the Force Awakens universe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that looks really, sounds really cool. So it's... I think it's going to revolve around BB-8 a bit. So it's kind of BB-8's adventures and, you know, we'll see. Who knows?
Sure.
Yeah. And then the other thing I saw was the trailer for Equalizer 2.
Ooh.
Which is very cool because Equalizer... Have you guys seen the Equalizer?
I have.
Yeah, the movie?
But just in case, give us a quick synopsis.
So it stars Denzel Washington.
Yep.
And it basically starts off with him working in effectively like a Bunnings, a Home Depot kind of place, right? And as the movie goes on, we see people he comes across get into trouble, and then he helps them out. I'm not going to say how, but he helps them out. So it's based on the TV series which starred the fantastically named Edward Woodward.
Isn't
that great?
Yeah, yeah.
I know from the... You know, he won a Golden Globe Award in 1986 for his work on... This is Edward Woodward.
Yep.
On the Equalizer TV series. Best actor in a TV series for The Equalizer.
Wow.
How random is that?
I didn't know that.
I know, how weird. Anyway, so he was a super old guy. So now the Denzel Washington version is obviously not so old, a lot more, you know, physically capable. You kind of find out he's got a bit of a dark history with, you know, black ops and stuff like that. Won't go into too much. But it is an incredibly violent film. And frankly, I'm putting it out there, controversial statement, wait for it, better than John Wick.
Oh.
I know that's controversial, right?
Oh,
I see you physically, like, move back from your seat. Now, see, I first saw John Wick and I thought, this is the best film. I love this. The first film?
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. And just happened to think, nah, it's on Netflix. I'll watch The Equalizer. And I have now watched it. I can count them. I've watched it 9 times.
Have you really?
Yes.
That's the amount of times that a kid will try and watch a video back in the day where you would go to a video store.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, yeah, when you had it for a week.
You had it that week, but your mum was still sort of restricting the amount that you could watch it. 9 was sort of getting the quota up there, and you would have been quite happy with it, but then you would have gotten out the next week again.
Equalizer. Anyway, I've seen it 9 times. Love the film. And for me, it kind of eclipses... John Wick in a number of ways, stylistically. I prefer the characters, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So when John Wick 2 came out, I'm like, But Equalizer 2! It's from the same director. It's got the same guy in it. The trailer's not fantastic.
In what way? Why is it sort of a bit lackluster?
Yeah, so the first trailer, the films are kind of filmed very beautifully. Like, they look really nice. There's lots of kind of restricted palette going on. You've got lots of light, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you've got lots of kind of oranges and those kind of colours.
Yeah,
if you,
nice.
If you look at the film. With this one, it's mostly, the trailer's mostly set at night, and you mm-hmm. don't, I think, get to see how much stylistically, we see what it's going to look like.
Mm. Okay.
But I don't know, recently, a number of the first trailers of films, the first, like the teaser trailer for Venom, right, was pretty naff.
Yeah.
And the real trailers for Venom's pretty good.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm hoping the second trailer for Equalizer 2, which comes out in July, is going to be rocking.
Sure.
Yeah, well, it's almost to the point now where people hang out for the trailers, the next lot of trailers.
With that in mind, I'm very excited for the new Ant-Man and the Wasp trailer tomorrow. Yeah. They've actually put out fun videos today of all the people from Avengers going, where is Ant-Man? Like, that's the
there
big question coming out of Infinity War. So they're tying in there, and that, I think, will make sense tomorrow.
Yep.
Now that the film's out and we've seen Infinity War, now we'll understand where Ant-Man's been. And that's clever marketing.
So, of course, by the time you're listening to this, the trailer is out so you can find it. It'll
find
be easy
it.
To find. And if we remember, 50-50, we'll put it up on social.
Yeah.
50-50 that we remember.
Hey, did I see that we put up part of the Drop the Mic?
Yes. So last week Tom was talking about a new show called Drop the Mic, and you were most impressed about sort of the rap battle between Ricky Lake and Jerry Springer.
Yes, I remember.
Well, this week they dropped the mic on that.
Did they?
On up that. Oh, hell yeah.
Who with?
So they had two great battles. One was Seth Rogen versus Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
they're good mates.
They're great
too.
Mates, and they went in on each other.
Randomly, 50-50 was on TV.
It was.
The movie they're both in.
Great movie.
Great movie,
SBS,
right?
SBS, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They went first and went hard on each other. It was great. And the second one was Terry Crews and, I can't remember his name, but the guy that sings Despacito.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that bloke.
And that's kind of the joke, is that Terry Crews, massive footballer turned funny actor, goes in hard on this guy. And the other guy's a better singer and he comes back really strong, but I won't say what. It's hard for me to hold back on a spoiler, but how Terry Crews finishes him, like literally finish him, is mind-boggling.
All right, we're going to have to find this.
Linz and I were laughing on the floor.
Really?
Like, literally.
Crying?
Yeah. Not crying, but I my eyes were wet.
And your stomach muscles were sore.
And my palms were sweaty.
Whoa.
And guess what was on my shirt?
Mom's spaghetti.
Correct.
Knew it.
Yes.
So, I knew it.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Well, that sounds rather exciting. We'll find that. The clips come out really quickly.
They do.
From
They're
that
good
show,
on it.
Which is good.
It's so much better
palatable.
Than lip-sync battle.
Yeah.
It shows some genuine skill, I think.
Yeah.
Lip-sync battle... I could do that. I could get up on stage and be a dick and jump around and mime, but these guys actually rap at each other in front of a crowd with Method Man from Wu-Tang Clan sitting 4 feet away judging you. That's terrifying.
I don't want to be a part of it, but I appreciate the fact that it exists.
I do not want Takal looking at me unfavorably. Killer bees.
That will be horror bubble. Anything else that we've seen this week, or should we get into some... real proper watching.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I watched a few new shows.
Yeah?
I watched one called The Ice Cream Show. Guess what it's about?
Gelato.
Yeah. Guys make an ice cream.
Wow.
But it's actually much smarter than I thought, in that it's from Viceland. And, mm-hmm. Vice, they're all doing very cool stuff. So it's about a guy and he's third generation running a ice creamery in Hawaii. And they have about 5 locations scattered across Hawaii.
You must have a hard time selling ice cream in Hawaii.
I know. Who wants that?
How awful.
Gross.
I know. So it's not long until he'll be taking over the business properly. His father's reaching retirement age. And this guy is... the episode starts with him having a very frank conversation with his dad of, why did you never franchise? This could have been huge. Why have you never gone for it? And his dad says, well, look, honestly, I didn't want the extra hassle. I love making the ice cream. I wanted to be involved in the process.
Not
I didn't want
business.
To do the business. Mm. And so this guy travels around talking to people that run different ice creameries who have gone the different directions and seeking business advice.
Wow.
I know. I went in thinking it would just be like, this is a great mint flavor. And instead, it's like really deep conversations about... economic responsibility versus emotional stability.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Is this like a one-off or is this...
I'm not sure. I think it's going to be a short series. I think it's maybe 6 episodes. That's what Vice tends to do.
Yep.
But whether it will be the same thing each time, I don't even know if it's the same host each time.
Yeah,
so it
right.
might just be this guy for one episode because he does come to a decision at the end of
okay.
the episode.
Yep.
So moving forward, it might be different topics around it and stuff like that. But I was really surprised. I was like, this is intellectual
it
and
held
creamy.
You. And cream. Mm. What a combination. Yeah. What have you been watching?
Okay, so I kind of tend to go into the backwoods and I try to watch kind of older stuff
yeah.
sure.
that's going on kind of like, you know, you're standing in Netflix and stuff
yeah,
like
nice.
That. So I've been watching a series on Stan called Trolleyed. And Trolleyed is an English show.
I know Trolleyed.
Do you know it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a sitcom effectively, a comedy. And it's basically about the people who work in this supermarket mm-hmm. in the UK. Now the thing is that I didn't realize it's had 9 series. 9 series.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
Because I've heard of it, but I thought it was newish.
Yeah. So it's but had people like Jane Horrocks have been.
Oh, yeah.
There's been lots of famous
Bubble
kind
from
of
Mab
people.
Fab. She's yeah, famous. Right. Come on.
There's been people kind of gone through it. And they tend to be in it for like a series or maybe 2 series, but they revolve the cast around, which
yeah,
is kind
right.
of interesting. So
freshen
yeah,
it up.
Yeah. So I've been watching that. So that's quite good. A little uncomfortable, you
in
know.
What
it
way?
Has its vaguely uncomfortable moments where
okay.
you know, if you had anything to do with management, then you'll know that there's managers who are like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so, kind of like I know I've got some friends who could watch Utopia.
Sure.
But would find it very
yep.
painful because it was far too realistic. Mm. For its own good. Trolleyed.
Yeah. So Trolleyed is good. On Netflix, they've got Big Mouth. Have you guys seen Big Mouth?
I haven't seen Big Mouth.
Oh, okay.
Big Mouth. Nick Kroll.
Yeah. Who does, by the way, the best impersonation I've heard of Will Arnett.
Really?
Sure, I can see that.
Yeah, basically, it's a cartoon about kids who are kind of just in the early stages of going through puberty.
Okay.
And it's not for kids in any way, shape, or form. Super, like, off. Like, it's really off. But there's a hormone monster in it, and Nick Kroll does the voice, but it sounds like so much like Will Arnett. It's ridiculous.
That has to be intentional, right?
Well... I wonder.
All right.
Yeah, so I've been kind of watching that, and I'm waiting for the new series of Power, which is supposed to be out in July.
Sure.
So if you guys
so you've got
have
a little
seen
bit of
Power,
a wait.
Yeah, I know. Everything's out in July. Where's the love?
I've been watching a couple of old things as well. I've been watching... Do you remember the Canadian production of Tintin?
Yes.
So it
was... '80s?
The cartoon show?
The cartoon
oh,
show
yeah, yeah,
of Tintin. Yeah.
Yeah,
so they would pick... It was usually a book... an episode or half a book an episode depending on how like intense it was. And I didn't realize at the time that Tintin just had a Canadian accent the whole way through and Thompson and Thompson just had these really bad Cockney accents that were really quite painful. But the actual animation was really true to the
yeah,
original books, and they're on Netflix. I think mm-hmm. I saw it on.
Nice.
For someone who was a huge fan of Tintin, loved Tintin, going back and watching them was pretty nostalgic, and makes me want to go and get my books out. I've still got them, every single one. It was great, but
even
yeah.
the later ones. You know, there's the found ones they've rediscovered now.
So
they've gone back to the original kind of drawings and stuff like
yes.
that. And some of them are so inappropriate. Like
they are so
oh, yeah.
racist.
Tintin in the Americas, just so, so racist.
They're so racist.
But the
some
Canadian
of them.
Accent kind of makes sense because it was written by a Belgian guy. So,
yep.
you know, you've got that quasi kind of Frenchy. Sorry to the Belgians out there.
And the Canadians.
And the Canadians. yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And they were really true to form. And I wonder, Tom. Hmm. How your daughter would take it. She's almost the right age
almost.
For Tintin now. Because it's the adventure, right?
Mm. It's not Asterix, though.
It's not Asterix.
It's not Asterix. And
yeah.
she's far more inclined to go and pick up a Batgirl or something.
Okay.
She's unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but she's been bitten by the superhero bug.
Fair enough. You can't go to a Tintin if you're after superhero powers.
Hey, can I make a recommendation to you?
Yes,
if you're
please.
If you've been looking through the old books,
yeah.
there's a guy, I can't remember the guy's name, but there is a comic series that there have been 4 books and 1 collected edition so far called Spy Seal.
I don't know this.
And it's a guy that draws a perfect recreation of Tintin style. And it's James Bond, but with a seal's head.
Neat.
Yeah.
It is spectacular. And
Spicy.
Oh, the coloration and everything. Like he draws on old stock paper, so it looks right.
That's nice.
Like the level of detail this guy goes to is amazing.
That's really nice. Okay.
So Spice Seal.
Spice Seal. I'll go and look for it. Anybody else been watching older stuff? That was kind of my old thing.
I got an old thing that's a new thing now.
Ooh.
So there's a show in the UK called Taskmaster, and it's hosted by Greg Davis. His sidekick is Alex Horn, who is the lead member of a comedy brass band. I know, I'm setting things up. Each season, they have five celebrities come on, and celebrities being comedians or sitcom actors, things like that. And they compete in challenges each week, ridiculous challenges that they film separately, and they don't know how everyone else has done. And, you know, they're solving physics problems, or, you know, they put a ping pong ball at the bottom of a pipe, there's holes in the pipe, and they have to fill it with liquid to get the ping pong ball out. Like, how do they solve it? And it sounds like it would be really dry, but the whole thing is steeped in British cynicism.
Amazing.
And these people get more and more competitive as the show goes on.
It sounds like that small segment in QI where Stephen Fry would go, "What do you think this does?"
Sure.
Or, "Here you go, everybody. Try and figure out how to do this." But they've made a whole episode out of that.
Well, I think they've done six, maybe seven seasons in the UK now. Anyway, the guy, Alex Horn, from the brass band guy, he's actually the producer and creator and everything of the show. He took it over to the US, and they've just started a US version. It's hosted by Reggie Watts, who...
I know that name.
He's the band leader on James Corden's show.
Right.
But more importantly, he was the band leader on Comedy Bang Bang for years. And just... he's the guy that does, you know, loops himself to make comedy songs. Okay. He does everything live impromptu.
Super clever.
Cool.
He's amazing musician. And then this series has Dylan Francis, who's a DJ that hangs out with Diplo all the time.
Yeah.
Lisa Lampanelli, who's known as the Queen of Mean. She does all the comedy roasts of people like that.
Okay.
And this sort of stuff. Ron Funches, who is one of my favourite people alive.
It's a great name.
Brilliant name.
Oh, my God.
He's such a funcher.
He has a shirt of him in Punch-Up. Remember the old 80s video game Punch-Up?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Punch-Up, Punch-On.
It wasn't it?
And it. But it's Ron Funches.
Brilliant.
And Freddie Highmore, who is a young British actor who's currently starring in The Good Doctor, where he plays like an autistic doctor.
Oh, yeah, that
Freddie,
guy.
Neil Patrick Harris style. And there's another female comedian. They've taken the US, the UK style of the show and just perfectly supplanted it to the US.
Which doesn't always work.
It shouldn't work at all. And part of the appeal is there's one British guy in the mix, you know, this challenger doing the stuff, and the rest of them are American. And one of the, like the Queen of Mean lady just swears through everything and openly hates the English host.
It's great.
So there's just so much contradictory tone that this show shouldn't work, but it really fucking does. And it's only 21-minute episodes rather than the UK, which had full hour-long episodes.
Wow, an hour. That's a long time.
Well, that's a long time.
44 minutes.
Yeah, no, but that's a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that is.
Mm. Yeah, so they've broken it down.
22 sounds.
Taskmaster, really, truly check this out. I think there's only going to be six episodes a season or something like that. Mm. Keep it really short like the other one.
Yeah.
And, wow, it just, you know, the first challenge, without getting me, the first challenge is, hey, here's a basketball without using your hands in any way. Get it into the net that's in the middle of a pool. You can use the stuff that's in the shed.
Wow. And, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's just watching five people solve a problem completely differently, most of them wrong.
So it's always the same people trying to solve problems?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and
they
cast,
score,
that's cool.
They score points through the episode, and each episode one person has to bring in something that means the world to them, and they all play for it, and whoever wins that episode gets that thing.
Oh,
no!
I
so
would
the
not
DJ
do that.
Brings in his laptop that he records and writes all his music
that?
On, and someone else won it.
No!
I
so
can't
the next
do
week,
that
guy had to bring in his stuffed toy from his childhood that he still has, and someone else won it, and he instantly started trying to barter to get it back. He's like, no, 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 this is mine. This is my new bum wipe. So, you know, they start off so nice to each other, and as it goes on, they're getting more and more competitive, and you can start to see some clashing happening and stuff.
Taken childhood toys and used it as toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's disgraceful.
But why would you do that? It's like,
I don't know.
If it's something that important to you, like, I would not put my G.I. Joe collection on the line. I'm just saying, all right? It's not going to happen, ever. That's
yeah,
getting
that's
buried
fair
with
enough.
Me.
Hi, I'm the voiceover guy, and I've got no pants on.
Hey, Leah.
Yes.
Have you watched anything lately that sucked?
I went into something this week that I thought would suck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the new version of Lost in Space. Do you remember a few weeks
ago?
Sure,
yeah, we talked about, yeah.
Someone, I can't remember who, asked if we'd watched it. I think it was Josh. I don't know. Sorry, Josh, or whoever it was. You asked if we'd watched it yet, and I said I would get around to it, and then I forgot, and I remembered again. So I watched one episode, and I'm like, not really in the mood for this. Not bad.
Not bad?
Really? Because I remember Lost in Space, the, would you call it a sitcom? It was sort of like Gilligan's Island back in the day. It was that kind of show.
You don't remember it very well, do you?
No, it was that kind of thing.
It's more like Star Trek.
Well,
on one planet.
Yeah, but this
rocks.
Lost in Space, have you watched any of the newer one?
I did. I watched the first 15 minutes.
Oh, is that all you got?
And then I gave it a thumbs down and I watched something else.
So why a thumbs down?
I just hated all the characters.
Fair enough.
So much. So you've got, okay, so you've got the father or, you know, male figure, whatever.
He did seem annoying.
He did, but he's got a military background. They crash on a planet and they all decide to do their own thing. How about just doing what the military guy tells you to do because he probably knows how to do it?
Fair.
Like, really, zombie apocalypse, right? Like, you're going to pay attention to the person who has some tactical knowledge, just not just like, oh, well, I'm just going to dive underneath the ice and get this thing out of the spaceship. I'm like, maybe he's got a better tactical plan. So for me,
it was all too unrealistic.
They were pretty good.
They look cool. Yeah. Like, it looks great. Mm. It looks really good. Whether I'll remember to watch another episode or not, but it was nothing like I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I thought it would be this sort of kitschy comedy takeoff of something from the 1960s, and it wasn't. So I was pleasantly surprised in that way.
It's more like Battlestar Galactica in terms of look. You know, that kind of Battlestar Galactica look than it is that old school thing.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. It was interesting to see it looking so kind of dark, I suppose, and foreboding. So, but it has a sense of scale to it, which is nice.
It does.
Well.
Yeah, it feels huge. Mm. It does. Did you watch something crappy?
I did.
Is that what you
I was just going to say about that, though. Yeah. I didn't want to see Lost in Space. I recently... DC Comics did a bunch of the old Hanna-Barbera cartoons, but like have put them in the real world and done comics. So there's Snagglepuss, and it's back, and he's being hunted by McCarthyism because he's a homosexual playwright and hanging out at Stonewall. And
this is a thing?
This is really a thing.
Wow.
And they did Flintstone, and it was all about class warfare.
Oh, this is so cool. Yeah, I have to see this.
And the Jetsons was mind-bogglingly good of... environmental catastrophes in the future and finding a way to leave Earth because we've ruined it.
Wow.
But at the same time, George gets like telekinesis and that's how Astro can talk to him. And George's mum died and had her consciousness uploaded via singularity into the
robot. Oh my God.
All this sort of stuff. So it did that sort of gritty, hard modern take. It's still really funny, but I don't feel the need to watch it as a TV show, stuff like that, because I've read a few comics that have done that really well and scratched that itch for me of updating a kitschy old show and giving it a new spin. So I really recommend checking out these Hanna. But there was also a fantastic one of, it wasn't called Wacky Races, but it was Dick Dastardly and...
Penelope Pitstop and that kind of thing?
Yes.
Wow.
And they're
Muttley.
And they're hunting down a drone that's spreading gas across the world called Pig One. And so they stop the pig one. And as they start to mutate, it gets weirder and weirder. And
so these are comic books, not TV shows?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's super cool.
Yeah, and they're normally just six-issue little miniseries and stuff like that, but I really can't recommend checking these out enough. There's been some really clever stuff they've done, and it's always very, very subversive, which is true to the sort of the take of stuff back in the day.
Yeah. And that was also, do you remember Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, that was that kind of thing as well, where you took those existing Hanna-Barbera characters, or, you know, whichever they were, characters, and it was really subversive kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you had a Fred Flintstone appeared in court, and that was a great TV series, really good. So it sounds like it's kind of similar to that, but in comic form.
Yeah.
I have to get those.
Yes. Really worth checking out.
Are they
out.
In trade yet or just individual issues?
Some of them are in trade. So you can either go to comic book stores. King's Comics, I know, has got a bunch of them. Otherwise, they're all up on Comixology.
Yep.
And they're all, most of them have been out a little while now, so you might be able to get them for 99 cents an issue.
My app of choice.
Me too. Hello, Wednesday nights. Take all my money. I know the exact minute that they drop on the store.
Really?
Oh yeah, I can't live with spoilers. As soon as something hits, I've got to be able to get it, download it.
See, I wait for trades.
Fair.
I always wait for trades because they're just more bang for your buck.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it's cool, you can sit through them. You know.
It's just, I live for that cliffhanger, that last page turn.
Mm.
Oh, that's my thing.
The page turn's always good.
Sorry to lead us down a path, but I think it was a good path to go down. I'm giving a PSA now. I watched Deep Blue Sea 2. Don't.
Okay.
That's enough to be
really
seen. Really bad. I love that first film. It's one of my favourite films ever. It is incredibly cheesy and yet very well made. Everyone there is giving it their all. They know they're playing with pretty crappy material, but they are treating it with Jurassic Park level love, and it has LL Cool J hanging out with a parrot singing about how his shark hat is like a shark fin. Deep Blue Sea 2, awful.
All different character, like no...
Nothing to do with the first one, but essentially a remake, yet still called Number 2.
That's
it goes through the very
sequel.
Similar beats.
Not yeah. Cool.
Smart, you know, billionaire guy is doing genetic testing on bull sharks.
Always a good idea, by the way. That always ends so well. Yeah. Every movie with genetic testing always ends well. We've either got 28 Days Later
yes.
or this.
It doesn't yeah. work. Especially when this guy starts shooting himself up with the same stuff he's given the sharks.
Wow, that's so DC.
Good
that's
life
amazing.
Choices.
You know, it could be like a supervillain.
Well,
maybe
the
they're
thing.
Setting up a supervillain.
Oh, I thought they were. Crossover. I kept waiting for it for him to start, you know, growing gills or some nothing. He just gets crankier and crankier and crankier.
Who wants to take stuff that makes you cranky anyway?
That's called
Hulk.
Life.
Yes,
Bruce
right.
Banner right now.
Yeah, that's true.
He's having performance issues.
He really certainly is. You've watched Avengers.
Yes, yep, I saw it on the weekend.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1, you have been warned.
What do you think? Do you like it? Was
it
fun?
I thought it was fun. It's a fun film. But I'm going to put it out there, and this is another controversial statement.
Well,
I like the DC movies, and I know that's very unpopular. But
why? I mean, not why is it unpopular? Why do you prefer them?
I think they're truer to the comic universe.
Okay.
Personally, yeah. Like, you know, it takes the look and feel of those individual titles, so Superman or Batman or whatever it would be, and it carries that kind of that look and that feel along with it. So I personally think that they're probably closer. But that being said, I thought Avengers was great fun, and it pulled away from the normal, what I would call the Marvel template for their movies.
Mm-hmm.
So Marvel have this template, apart from Black Panther and probably Ant-Man
yeah.
and The Last Thor, basically.
Yep.
And it's I think it's that Joss Whedon thing, where you come in, you have like an action scene, and then some joking around, and then a disposable hour in the middle of the film where there's some bad guy, and it could be bad, and might be whatever.
Yep.
And then at the end, you've got like a big battle and people kind of laugh. And this movie did not follow any of that
no.
at all.
It's true.
And
yeah.
I was actually honestly surprised by the direction, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of weird things, though. And, I mean, I don't know if you want to do spoilers or anything, but I was surprised that Doctor Strange, in his first encounter with the bad guys, was so underpowered. He didn't seem to really do stuff in that first altercation.
Nah.
It was weird. I didn't understand.
He busted
that.
Out some crimson bands of Sidorok. Got the arms going and stuff.
He
but
did.
Yeah,
he
spent more time laying on the ground.
Yeah, and then later on in the film, you're like, oh, okay, this is Doctor Strange. He can do literally anything. He's magic.
He
it's like
is.
Thor. He's magic. Mm. And you know, like Shazam, Captain Marvel in the DC mm-hmm. universe. They can do anything. They're magic. You know, there's no superpower to fight.
Mm.
So I just thought that was a kind of interesting take on Doctor Strange.
I think it's an intentional kneecapping in the same way that they didn't have Thor or Hulk in Civil War. Because if you've got one character that's so overpowered, and in that first battle, Thanos wasn't there yet. It was just some of his underlings.
Mm.
So I think if they'd had him go full power, then it invalidates.
Yeah,
like,
it could be.
Who needs Black Widow, really?
Yeah, well, no one. Actually, the answer to that is no one,
yeah.
really, let's be honest.
Mm.
You know, she kind of belongs in a S.H.I.E.L.D. comic somewhere, but maybe not in the Avengers. I'm just going to be controversial, put that out there.
I'm with you.
She was there a bit.
Oh, you know, she had that great line where she got some alien goo splattered on her and goes, ew, gross.
Having now seen Black Panther with the fantastic bodyguards that he has in that film, and they're mortals with great technology, it kind of puts pay to Hawkeye and Black Widow, because you've already got people existing inside the universe who are probably more powerful and still, you know, they're mortals.
Yeah.
They don't have superpowers or anything.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether it could be a great opportunity for Marvel to start a Black Ops-style movie. So,
ooh.
And you could have Black Widow and Hawkeye and some other people in it. And sure, you know, they're humans with powers and whatever it would be. But wouldn't it be cool to have a really dark kind of superhero team? Like years ago, there was a Wildcats superhero team, and there was all these kind of, back in the late 90s, they had these...
Is that like Deathblow?
Yeah, exactly. Like that kind of stuff,
yeah.
you know. They could do a really gritty movie. That'd be great fun.
Grifter.
That would be great.
Grifter, yeah. That's
I'm really down with this
idea. And Grifter, interestingly, if you've seen any of the DC animated movies, which are All fantastic. Mm-hmm. All fantastic.
Batman Ninjas this week, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. Grifter turns up in I think it's Throne of Atlantis.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of bizarre. He turns up and the animated DC Unity verse is just fantastic. It's so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Avengers.
No, we can keep going back and forth. It's fine. Did you find it slightly overwhelming that there were so many characters that we had to keep not only being introduced to within the movie? I mean, we knew who they were, but we had to keep seeing new people every scene and then having to check in on them. Were you exhausted by that, or was the pace not too...
No, I didn't find it hard at all. That being said, I did read X-Men for 15 years.
Right.
So, and, you know, across X-Men, X-Force, X-Man, Uncanny X-Men, you know, you're used to following a lot of characters for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't find that overwhelming. There's a couple of weird things in the film, though. Do you know... There's a scene where, you know, Wakanda is covered by the big shield. They open up the big shield and let the, you know, these monsters come through. Why didn't they just shut it again? Fight those guys, kill them all, open it up, let more come through, shut it. There was no air superiority either. Come on, tactically, people. Think tactically.
Yeah, that's how you win the big boss video games. Right. That's how you get through that.
It was great, though. Like, the thing I do like about Avengers, and Marvel do better than I think DC do, definitely, is scale.
Sure.
It was huge.
It was huge.
Nothing's ever been that big.
You look at them and you think, like, even there's a scene where Thanos goes to get the Soul Stone, and instead of, like, rocking up to, like, a church somewhere and it's over there, they've got these huge, like, pillars into the sky. Yeah. He walks up this big staircase, these huge pillars. I mean...
Red Skull like a monk.
Random.
Yep. So, yes.
So good. So good. Funny quick story. Guy behind me in the movies, every time a superhero turned up, he'd go, "Oh, that's Steve Rogers," to the girl to the girl next to him. "Oh, that's Steve Rogers. Oh, that's the Hulk, right, to show off." Anyway, the friend I went to see this with, as soon as Red Skull turns up, from behind us, he goes, "Oh, yeah, that's Vision." She turns around and goes, "No, it's Red Skull." And he didn't say a thing for the rest of the film.
Perfect.
Right?
Perfect.
Shut down. Mm-hmm.
Look, I went back and saw it again night.
And how was your second viewing?
Well, first time I watched it with a bit of a critical eye so we could come and talk about it. The second time, just to be able to sit and watch it as a fan, I noticed all this stuff that they set up at the beginning that pays off later.
Wow, okay.
Like what?
And it's... The first time watching it, there's so much going on. You're bamboozled by it and stuff like that.
But
watching it the second time, you realise that Thanos really is the main character. He goes through the total arc.
Yep.
He's the protagonist, and we understand him as a hero by the end, you know, in total hero narrative.
Yeah.
But the film really is about Thor and Rocket.
Sorry, he's Rabbit.
Yes, Rabbit. Thor is accepting the fact that he's the new Odin, and so much of it is about accepting responsibility, setting aside personal wishes, and putting people forward, not just Asgardian.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow.
But with Rocket, it's just, I rewatched Guardians 2 recently.
And Guardians 2
ends with Rocket finally accepting and understanding that he is loved, which is his whole thing for the first and second film is that he pushes away anytime there's any emotional connection. And he has all that conversation with Yondu about, "You're like me, you push people away, you need to accept that people love you." So this new the Infinity War starts with him jokingly going, "I'm the leader," when they first meet Thor. "I'm the leader, I'm the boss."
Yeah.
And then weirdly having to be a father figure to Groot because Star-Lord's not around, and then having to be a leader for Thor because Thor's falling apart, being an emotional board. And then at the end of the film, Rocket's the only one left from the Guardians, so he now has to be the leader to bring them back.
Wow, dude, I did not see that. That's so cool.
This is what I mean about it being there being so much going
on. There are so many things.
I've only watched it once, but the first watch, I'm like, this is slightly overwhelming, but not to the point where I'm lost. Mm. But I also understood that in the first watch, I was definitely not getting everything. It was impossible to be able to grasp everything that was going on.
But it wasn't that I was sitting there watching for Easter eggs and stuff like that, but these short character moments. So some people you might only spend 4 minutes with total across the film, but they all get at a minimum some sort of snappy line and then either a light dusting or a reaction. I'll leave it at that.
Yep.
But some of them you can actually see that there is this through line of character arc that isn't it isn't establishing anything in this film. It's continuing the character arcs from the previous films. Mm. So if you haven't seen them, it doesn't matter. If you have, it's very subtly done. Yeah, that's the stuff that's really sticking with me.
See, the thing that's interesting you say that, because the thing I noticed was from the very start of the film is it literally takes up where Thor Ragnarok ends.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's just second.
Bang, straight away, it's here, and that's it. And I thought it was interesting that the interplay, which we pick up at the end of Thor Ragnarok, between Loki and Thor is exactly the interplay that we pick up. It's almost as if they shot it the same day, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's if you were looking at sequential filming, it feels like that. The respect and I think the affection that they both realise that they were brothers or are brothers, they yeah. do have affection for each other. Yep. And, you know, they are. I mean, even when Loki says, you know, he's Odin's son, he said, you know, I'm Loki Odin's son, effectively, you know, trying to take on the mantle of the leadership, but in turn having an ulterior motive. And there's all this idea of sacrifice as well. And I thought it was interesting to see War Machine kind of teaming up with, is it Falcon or Red Falcon?
Yep.
I can't remember. Yeah, Falcon, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that they kind of teamed up a little bit. And then, you know, when you get to the end of the film and you see what kind of happens there with the two of them, it's almost like you've got these two guys who are really the boundaries of the superhero teams.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Kind of, in mm-hmm. fact, almost kind of bringing the team in all in together because yeah. here's these two guys looking after each other.
Yep.
And, yeah, it did have those moments. And, mm. yeah, I mean, you know, don't want to give away the end, but... Yeah, it's. I think it's pretty full on. I was surprised, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know people die. That's a given. Everyone knows that. But I think it was surprising when people did and how they did. And yes. it doesn't just happen at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
though,
true.
Though, a bit of revenge for the people who took their five-year-olds and let them talk through the entire film and got to the end of the film, and then the parents had to explain to them how come their superheroes were dead.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. We in the session that we went to, there was a kid that cried throughout the whole credit. Yeah.
Fine during the movie. Just yeah. to finish, the kid was about 10, just sobbed yeah. in his mother's arms.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
did not take it.
Wasn't
yeah.
the interplay with Iron Man and Spider-Man good?
Mm. The father-son dynamic.
You know, isn't that weird? Because I've watched Spider-Man Homecoming a couple of times now, and I have to admit, I bought the DVD on spec, thinking, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Really, really
it's
liked
great.
It. Isn't it good?
It's Ferris Bueller yeah. mixed with Breakfast Club and whole 80s vibe.
All those genre things that I like, and I think most people like, of, mm-hmm. you know, if you're of an age. Mm. And the dynamic that was kind of built there then moves into this, and you can see, you know, like Spider-Man's constantly, or Peter Parker, depending on how you want to look at it, is constantly looking for reassurance from Tony Stark. Like,
yep.
He's constantly looking for approval, right? And then in this film, we kind of see that right towards the end that kind of happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was, you know, at some point, Tony Stark relied on Spider-Man, Peter Parker, to help him with the glove. Like, it was just the two of them.
Yep.
He's like, hey, come here, help me with this. And they're doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the two of them together was really interesting.
Well, if you want to get really meta with it, so if
we probably do.
Tony Stark has had the best character development across 9 films or whatever it is he's appeared in now. So if you go back to the very start, he was an industrialist who refused to hand over any technology to the government and was convinced he could save everyone himself. And then throughout things, you know, he gets to the Avengers and he's got to learn to work with other people. But then he gets PTSD at the end of that and he's got to learn to relinquish some control. And instead of wanting to protect himself and his people, it's about putting a shield up around the world. And he tries that in Ultron and it backfires horribly on him. And he learns some hubris. And like it's just all gone through this, but he's now at the point there where he doesn't want to be Iron Man anymore. He's taken the thing out of his chest. It's an involuntary thing that he keeps putting on the suit because he feels he needs to protect. So now he's looking for the descendant, the protege.
Yeah.
And so he'd found that, and he's mentoring him in Spider-Man Homecoming and stuff. And in this film, that's that perfect visual representation of he saves the kid with the Iron Spider suit. He didn't tell him that he'd made that suit. He chucks it on him. It's got all these extra things. It's similar in style but not look to Iron Man.
Mm.
All this sort of stuff. And as you say, he's relying on him. He believes this kid can be him but better.
Mm.
He's Tony Stark without, you know, genius, going to be rich, all this sort of stuff, but without as much ego-driven. However,
yeah, absolutely.
Look, Tony Stark's biggest problem is ego. Spider-Man's is pride. Mm. If you look, he's always after reassurance from Tony Stark, but he's too proud to ever ask for help.
Mm.
He always wants the good job, but never to call in and go, I think there's an issue we might need help with. There's a giant vulture man in my city. This sort of stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so how long do we have to wait till
May 2nd next year, maybe May 3rd. somewhere around there.
So what's going to happen now that Chris Hemsworth wants out and rumours are Robert Downey Jr. wants out?
So Downey has been on a per-film contract basis since Iron Man 3, so they pay him a lot of money each time they want him to come back.
Some massive, like, hundreds of millions of dollars, something ridiculous,
isn't it? Gets back-end deals, so he'll get paid well, but as long as the film comes out, you know, there was one year he made something like $400 million or something.
Yeah. Whatever.
I think the last one he got $226 million, something ridiculous, because that's his deal, right? He got the George Lucas deal, where you take like a percentage whatever.
I think he's up around somewhere like 4%.
Cowabunga.
Somewhere very. Anyway, but yes, a lot of them, their film contract ends at number six. Mm. Sorry, with six films, and Avengers 4 will be the end. So that's Hemsworth, that's Chris Evans.
Chris Pratt too, isn't it?
Potentially Pratt.
Yeah, I think Pratt wants out.
But, well, he's booked for Guardians 3 as well, which they haven't announced, but everyone knows it.
Well, but maybe that's the thing, because Rocket, in the comics, Rocket does form a team. Like, he does form his own dudes at, you know, some point over the past 30 years, Rocket Raccoon's been around. So I wonder whether maybe they'll go in that direction.
Yeah, maybe.
Look, I think we talked about it last week. The two, for Avengers 4, the two things that I think, if a lot of the universe is missing, the two ways to fix that is either time travel so that didn't happen, or alternate universe to replace what happened.
Yeah, so is it the quest? Do you go on the quest to change the universe back again, which is, you know, that's pretty much kind of time and memoriam people do, don't they? Go on the quest, get the universe back again, turn back time. Or, as you say, do they go, you know, do they get to this point and realise this is the universe, this is just how it's going to be?
Well, I would love it if they skip across universes and pluck other versions of existing heroes we have.
Well, we have the female Thor.
Jane Foster.
Exactly. We have her. We have, you know, there's lots of new alternatives now inside the Marvel Universe, which would be really interesting to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ironheart, who's the young African-American female.
And
Iron
now
Man.
The Black Panther has been so incredibly successful, I bet they're honing their ideas into that one.
Well, they've got two potential replacements already. Shuri, his younger sister, the genius builder, or M'Baku, who's the vegetarian guy that leads the gorilla cult. Mm. Awesome. But yeah, I think that's a really good way they could get around if some of the characters, if they want to replace them. So you could go America Chavez, who's the Latino female bisexual Captain America.
Yep. That's right. Yeah.
She can kick that makes stars, like her kicks rip reality into forming a star shape, and she can jump through to different universes.
And isn't that the key with the idea with bringing Captain Marvel in? And the fact that, you know, if you know, we are potentially looking, and that's the rumour, we hear Captain Marvel coming into the Marvel Universe. I mean, effectively, she is, you know, the Superman of the Marvel Universe. She can do anything, like quite literally anything. I was reading a thing about her online. I've only read a couple of her comics in years gone by, but she's certainly changed a lot in that time.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, you know, and we've seen a Marvel, you know, like a male Captain Marvel. And isn't America Chavez, aren't her mums both, I'm trying to get this right, I think both her mums are different versions of Captain America?
Yes.
Really?
How random, isn't that a cool story? So two versions of Captain America.
Yeah.
Her grandmother as well.
There you go. They all, like, they fall in love and then,
amazing.
I mean, that's cool. I mean, granted, it's an oligarchy. I'm just saying, I'm putting it out there. but that's great. Like, they do clever little things. And I haven't comics come a long way? And,
absolutely.
And these universes come a long way that we can experience this. And it's
and
it's
the fact
really
that there's
amazing.
A wealth of storylines in them now that people can either delve into or just partake by watching a film.
And that's the thing with Avengers. You know, you sit in an Avengers movie and you see the people who are there watching the film or any Marvel movie generally.
Yeah.
Except probably Ant-Man. But a lot of those films, you look around, the people who are in there are so generic moviegoer.
Yep.
Sure. You know, they're not necessarily comic people. And you go to a DC film and they're more likely to be comic people. It's just the kind of things that people are attracted to, you know, what pulls the people in.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Marvel definitely has that much wider. I mean, they look fantastic, those films. I mean,
it's the thing.
I did see one thing today, and this is not a knock at you as being a DC lover, but what Justice League made in 16 weeks in cinema, Avengers made in 2.7 days.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
That's insane.
But isn't it amazing?
But it's done really well on Blu-ray. It's one of the biggest seller on Blu-ray.
Is it really?
Ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Unfortunately, though, and I think this is, I saw an interview with Samuel L. Jackson the other day, and he was saying he believes that the reason why the Marvel movies do so well is because the director is given full control. This is my vision, and the studio just keep out. Disney stay in the background, unlike they do with Star Wars. They just stay in the background, and they do their thing. And then you see DC, and Warner Brothers just hack into these creations. You know, like they just do. They have not done the universe favors. Mm. You look at the so Batman versus Superman, which a lot of people don't like because the theatrical release is rubbish.
Martha.
But if you look at the Batman versus Superman extended edition, the Blu-ray version has 40 minutes of extra film in it. This isn't extras. It's 40 minutes, and it's a much bigger and better film, closer to what the director wanted. Now, if Warner Brothers just decided to take a punt and follow the vision of one person who they've had their eye on since, like, Watchmen, you know, in Zack Snyder, just let him do what he wants to do.
Just have faith in your choice.
Exactly. Yeah. Just have faith in, and the studio stays out. We might see the film that people actually want to see and not Suicide Squad.
You know what, my favourite extended edition that improves was Daredevil. Have you ever seen the extended one of that?
Yes, I have. Yes.
It's the only time in history that more Coolio was a good idea. Coolio is in it.
No way.
Yeah, uh-huh. He's really good. Well,
it was a sign of its times.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it.
Elektra was a great film too, actually.
Yeah, I'll give it time.
Both of those were good films. Mm.
Just wish it didn't have Carmen Electra in it.
It did not.
No, Jennifer Garner.
You know. It's
Ghana.
He's the least Greek-looking person you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Look, let's get into a few other things because I know that we've watched some other stuff.
Sure.
Now, last week I was telling you that I had done a whole lot of binging with Westworld.
Yes. Have you caught up?
Finished the first season.
No, it's good, good isn't it?
Amazing.
Right? It's probably 3 episodes too long for my liking, but it's very good.
So good. First couple of episodes of the second season. It's okay. We won't go too far into it.
I'm refusing to talk spoilers because I have a lot of people who like to wait and watch 5 episodes in a night.
I was going to, but a lot of people haven't caught up yet. So all I'll say is that after the second episode, I'm excited to see where the story's going.
This show is becoming more and more Lost.
Really?
It really is.
I love that first series of Lost. That first series of Lost was just rock and roll, destroyed by the end, but that's a different story. But Westworld was fantastic, and I know it was so ultraviolet, good. And I have to agree with you, like, lots of dong. Like,
much dong.
So much. Isn't it amazing, though? Like, I suppose fortunately or unfortunately, we're used to so much kind of naked female. And when you see a naked man in a movie like or a TV show, you're like, that's interesting. it's a bit like in, what was that sci-fi series that was out early this year on Netflix?
Altered Carbon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Altered Carbon. Same thing with that.
A lot of dong?
Some dong. Westworld is your pinnacle, right?
Yeah.
Westworld is where you get, you know, more bang for your buck, so to speak. But yeah, I'm surprised by the amount in it. I really am. And it seems so natural as well. Like, it makes sense. It's not like Game of Thrones was like, ooh, boobs.
Yeah, let's have that. Good. We've gotten that bit over and done now for the rest of the storyline. But Westworld, there's a context.
Yeah, it's a dehumanization tactic.
Exactly, and that's it. You know, you see people, and same thing when you see, you know, dead bodies and stuff like that. There's a scene towards the end of season one, you remember, you see those bodies piled up.
Yep.
I mean, the fact is, we as the viewer are becoming desensitized.
We are.
So much so.
They talked part of the reason for the nudity is because of pornography and because nudity is not so hard to find, whereas it used to be, you know, you had to get magazines and hide them in the bush and all this sort of stuff. Whereas now it's so easy to access that. We've become more desensitized to seeing that stuff so that they can show nudity in a non-sexual setting. Which is very weird.
It is weird.
You've either got Johnny Knoxville running around with his dick out in a comedy or porn, sex scenes, that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so many different kinds of bodies as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched slightly to try and move over to the side here, but I watched the new Jumanji the other day and I noticed how I noticed how all the kids were so thin.
Mm-hmm.
They had the big jock guy, but even the nerdy girl was so thin. And you don't realize until there's a scene right at the start of the film where you kind of see her on the side and you realize you are really, really, really thin. And this is that idea of there is one type of body for teenagers in films. And, you know, you look at, say, Kick-Ass as an example. All of those kids pretty much have the same body.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Most of them do. Same with Jumanji. All those kids except for the jock have the same body.
Yeah, right.
So in Westworld, there's all these different, you know, you have obese, you know, fat guys, basically, who are there being repaired or whatever. It's very clever. I like how they've done that.
Such a good show. Yeah.
And second I don't pay season. TV. I've got to wait for the DVD, damn it.
Damn it, Janet. But that's good because then you'll be able to binge.
I go to a mate's.
Oh,
we,
really?
We have a viewing party on a Monday night. Oh, well, Monday cool. afternoon. I get around there 4 o'clock. Mm. We watch it together.
That's cool.
But when I, for anyone who has watched, I'm sure they will understand what I'm saying about it. It's getting lost-ish in that more layers are being pulled back on things outside Westworld.
But it had to. I mean, the first season was all about revealing and understanding what Westworld was, that it had to be more. Otherwise, it'd just be more of the thing we already knew.
It's a narrative thing. If you're going to have a battle between two parties, if you spend one season with one party learning them and their motivation and what drives them, then you have to be aware of what their antagonist is.
Yeah.
Though, interestingly, you know, I think it was in the last or the second last episode of season one, you saw the samurai guys in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they make reference to, oh, that's something we don't talk about, or that's a different thing.
Yes.
You know that those guys are named. They have names, those characters. So I take it that that's a pointer to what may happen in season two. So, yeah, I don't know if this is another world or another.
Feel free to block your ears, but I read yesterday that there's an episode coming up that's entirely in Japanese.
Wow.
Right.
That would be so cool.
Subtitles and all.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, it's
I'm on board.
Because instantly I'm like, oh, that's a real, what an interesting idea. That's not Wild West, it's something completely different.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, they're credited with names. I'm like, they're actually
people. I didn't realise that. Yeah. I didn't know.
There's been one shot in a trailer for season two that has Maeve, Thandie Newton's character, decked out in full kimono.
She's holding a samurai sword.
Yeah, like right up above.
Isn't she great, though?
I love her.
She's so good, man. I think she's in. Is it
Solo? She's gonna be in Solo.
I think she's in. Is she in one of the Guy Ritchie films as well? Is it? I can't remember which.
Rock
which
and
one
Roller.
It is. Yeah, Rock and Roller. She's so good in that. You know, she's just a great actress. Really good.
I even enjoyed her in. I think it's called Run, Fat Boy, Run, which was Simon Pegg directed by David Schwimmer.
Really?
It's the first American film, wasn't it? Yeah.
It wasn't great. Hank Azaria was in there, I think. Oh, no. Bernard Black. What's his name? Dylan Morris from Dylan Moran from Black Books.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
It's a rare American outing for him.
Yeah, why
Solo,
did he...
the only.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, oh, wow.
I don't think he did too much. He slinked back.
Well, neither did that film, so that's probably why.
Oh, I've got a really good segue. You ready for this one? Speaking of Guy Ritchie, let's talk about Morgan from Fear the Walking Dead.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1. You have been warned.
Now, I know, Abe, you're not a Fear the Walking Dead watcher.
No, lacking the pay TV.
Do you mind if we just talk it through?
I'm a guest
gonna have
in
no
your
context.
Strange land.
Brilliant.
And I love zombies, so go for it.
Look, this season of Fear the Walking Dead is by far my favourite of this spin-off.
There are timeline shenanigans.
Nice.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's actually more captivating for me than Walking Dead.
It's a lot of, well, why is this person in the past but not with the group now?
Yeah.
See, that's cool. Yeah. I like that. See, I saw the first season of Walking Dead and really liked it, and then, I don't know, I watched something else.
Yeah.
But this, I hear good things about this Fear the Walking Dead and how it's totally changed the narrative. So
it's not
really
beholden
curious.
To any comic. So okay. It's not adapting storylines and stuff like that. And they started out one way, and it was, you know, the actual fall. So Walking Dead started 5 weeks after the collapse of society because Rick had been in a coma that time. He wakes up, starts.
Which Whereas I thought was a great premise.
Yes.
Now, Fear Walking starts. Dead starts with just before, like just as it's about, as it's happening, where people are like, what's going on? That person's weird.
Cool.
Yeah.
But they've jumped forward a bunch of times. So this happened and then they jump forward 6 months to see and then another 6 months and then this one's potentially like 3 years later. So they're now at the same time as proper Walking Dead. And while that's going on, we're flashing back to at least a year ago probably, but we don't really know. And they're being bothered by a group called the Vultures.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's some
and
interesting
there's a
stuff
gunslinging
happening.
Rootin' cowboy character now.
I'd seen a shot of that.
So it's Garrett Dillahunt, who I promise you would have seen in a ton of stuff.
Okay.
He's fantastic character actor. But he's just come in with probably boy like this. We're going to get out there and shoot some man like that.
That's right.
And
it's
so having,
spot on.
Having him with Morgan, Lenny James is a British character actor, and he's playing like a guy who could easily be a serial killer, but he's using monk techniques and a keto to try and remain calm and preach a message
he's
of peace.
Very unhinged.
Okay.
He and is trying so hard to be normal.
The two of them have paired, like the cowboy and him have paired up, and they found this woman who's a former journalist, and she got a hold of a SWAT van and set it up so there's panels that open up with guns that you can pull a lever and they'll fire and thin out zombie hordes. Wow. It's ridiculous compared to the main show.
Okay.
And yet...
it's somehow more captivating for me. I think it's because they've gone back to that survival mode where The Walking Dead now is sort of, we're going to fight with this group and this group and this group. Where this
it's always about rebuilding society.
Exactly, where this is just surviving, just trying to get through. I want to go over there.
Do you think it's because that you like it so much because it's an alternate look at the universe that you really like? You know, sometimes we get those offshoots, you know, like you're used to the universe, right? And the universe kind of do-do-do-do-do just goes along doing its thing. And all of a sudden, it's like someone's to the side of it looking at it in a different perspective.
Look, it's very much that mixed with the fact that the show refuses to get stagnant. So Walking Dead has been in the same location for 3 years, and whether or not they move, and it's just always... they get stuck in a bit of a storytelling cycle and a loop, whereas this show, they kind of throw the guidebook out at the end of every season and start completely fresh and bring in new characters or kill big characters. So that's why we're talking about this week's episode.
Ooh.
So if I don't have the pay TV, is it on anywhere else?
Might be on Netflix.
I haven't seen it.
It's not on Netflix. I know that, was it SBS that had the earlier seasons of Walking Dead? I don't know if they've got Fear. Have a look.
Yeah, it's Fear, because that sounds really interesting. I'm just
have
curious.
A look for
otherwise,
it.
Do you ever get anything off iTunes?
No, but
iTunes,
I can.
So I have access to everything at like 5:30 the afternoon. That stuff aired over there.
Okay.
And that's what I use. But the Australian iTunes store as well gets stuff pretty quickly as well.
I'm pretty sure
I did
PlayStation
look at
as well.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Series 3 of Game of Thrones, that's what I did. I got it off iTunes.
Yep.
So,
I guess what we can say is that he didn't make it out in the nick of time.
Oh, I like what you did there. Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, like to kill big characters and give you the shock. I feel Game of Thrones and Walking Dead do it so much now that I'm like, this one threw me. Ooh. I was literally shocked.
There was no setup.
So this is like
at all.
Okay, so even worse than a Ned Stark style death scene, this is...
it was a Ned style. Yeah, it was a Ned Stark style for me because I wasn't expecting it. Yeah.
But even more, it was caused by someone that this character was trying to save.
What?
Yeah. It's really...
And it wasn't even like a full backstab. It was just like, bam, oh, did that happen? Oh, shit. He's done.
Hang on a second.
Far
is that,
out, he's
whoa,
dead.
Okay.
Is that like in the scene in Gone Girl? Do you remember, have you seen Gone Girl?
Yeah.
Oh,
great.
Yeah.
There's a scene where she kills a character in a bedroom.
Yep.
And that just happens out of nowhere. It's just
it very much felt like that.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
And there's some beautiful flicking between the timelines of him performing the same move in the past, but in a peaceful setting as while he's laying there bleeding out.
Wow. Well done. It was really well done.
That's cool.
Yeah.
He's a reformed junkie, this character. And so we've seen him, British actor Frank Delane, he's gone through a whole bunch of different character arcs and stuff. And I read some interviews with him today and he said he'd done everything he could do with the character. You know, he'd been in a dark place, he'd redeemed the character, he'd taken it back to the dark, he was good again now, wants to go and do some other things.
This is, like I said, the best season for me of this.
And so what season are we up to in
season 4?
Dead? Right, okay.
Yes, but they're shorter
really
seasons as well, aren't they? First
they...
season was like 6?
Yeah.
How much how good is a 6-episode season?
They really have to condense it. Every moment counts.
Exactly.
There's no wasted time. There's no Carol sitting in a room with some saviours talking for an hour.
See, I'm an old school network. Give me a 23.
You love it?
Yeah. I'll happily take a few dud episodes because I just sometimes like to hang out with a character and understand. Like, I like a palate cleansing episode. So if something's flat but you can see chess pieces being moved, I enjoy that
setup.
The thrill of what's going to come.
Yeah,
and
enough.
I get that because I'm like that with Black Lightning. Like, I love Black Lightning.
Yeah, we're big fans here.
Great show. I'm preaching to the converted, obviously. But there's elements of those or parts of those episodes where you go, but it's all for something. It's all going to something, you know?
It's
every
retroactively
no waste
interesting.
Time.
Exactly.
Do you watch DC Legends of Tomorrow?
No, I don't.
Dude, that 100%, I think you will love that show. The first season it sucks.
Can I skip the first season?
No.
Damn it!
So the first season, everything's great, but the bad guy's Vandal Savage, and the guy playing him is really poor, and they have Hawkman and Hawkgirl, who are terrible, because Hawkgirl, any situation where she's dealing with crisis, she's like, I don't know what to do. I mean, just 3 weeks ago, it was just a barista. This sort of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Season one, they get rid of those two.
Okay.
And Steel comes in, and like the... Season two, they throw out all the rules and discover that the rules of time travel shouldn't apply to these guys because they're skipping through time and trying to fix things and stuff. So it just gets so silly.
Gets bogged down by ridiculousness.
Yeah, and like they accidentally leave a Tickle Me Elmo Furby-style toy somewhere that becomes worshipped by Vikings.
It sounds like Quantum Leap.
It's very Quantum Leap.
Mm. Which we like as well.
But ridiculous. Like there was one episode where they had to save Elvis because somehow the guitar he was using had been touched by, what's the guy, the Devil Went Down to Georgia?
Not Chuck Berry.
Anyway, he's using a haunted guitar and Elvis accidentally raises the spirits of the damned.
It's so bad.
This is
and so,
so
they have
bizarre.
To get him to perform in a church and sing gospel choir and then that makes the spirits settle down. They have one episode where they have to go back and help George Lucas from being attacked and save him in a trash compactor. And
That's so cool.
Set up all these great... There's another episode where they have to go back and save Barry Obama in the early 70s from Gorilla Grodd.
Oh, my God. Okay,
and that's
cool.
The first 4 minutes of the episode.
That's pretty cool.
So please go check it out. Let me know what you think because season one sucks and getting through it's a slog. But once you do, it's a reward. And there are only 13 to 16 episode seasons.
Oh, you can do that. Really cool. You can do that. That's doable.
I would really like to see Marvel do something smart televisual.
Yeah.
Because for me, S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't work. I don't know about you guys. You guys might like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It's gone through ups and downs for me.
Okay.
Season four with Ghost Rider and stuff was fantastic. Okay. Season five, where they were in the future in space, suck balls.
It sounds dreadful. But yeah, it's just DC seemed to do really some of their TV stuff pays off really well. Like I thought Gotham was really, really great.
I love Gotham.
And Arrow started well and didn't really go so well. But I think if you're smart and you take risks, like Westworld took risks, and it sounds like Fear of the Walking Dead is taking risks
You've
got to take the risk, you know, and you've got to trust that your audience, who are adults, look, we're not 13.
Yep.
Nope.
And even for superheroes, they know their core audience is 35.
Yep.
Right? That is their core audience. Treat them like they're 35-year-olds. Yeah.
The best thing I'll say about the DC shows. So each year now they're doing the crossover event. I don't know if you've watched
any of
them.
I've heard about that. Yeah, yeah.
So the most recent one of Crisis on Earth X.
Oh, okay.
Was Arrow, Legends, Flash, and Supergirl.
Was that the Nazi Supergirl?
So it's Nazi versions of all of them.
All of them?
Yeah, but it let them also introduce Citizen Cold, so a good version of Captain Cold, and the Ray, and, you know, bring in a lot of Justice Society, like JSA characters, in a really clever way. But, you know, they don't have a Nazi version of Flash. They instead have Earbud Thorn, so they've got reverse Flash in the mix.
Oh, wow.
Dude, it's so good. And it's
cool.
I know this sounds like pettiness because I've shit on it before and stuff, but it's so much better than Justice League. Because you've got some of these shows, 6 years of back history with these characters, that seeing them interact and seeing an evil reflection of themselves and stuff, there's some really strong emotional punches through.
I love that twist. I mean, they do it a lot in the comic books, but it's so interesting because you're right. They can take something or a character who is their whole thing is, you know, if you look at Supergirl, for instance, like it's, you know, truth, justice, the American way. Well, what if you spun that person was on the other side?
Yeah.
You know, how would you feel about that person? I mean, not well. You would not feel good about that person.
Yeah, you would
really,
not. You would
honest.
Not.
Have you read Red Son?
I have, years ago.
So they still talk to the day, to this day, about making that a film.
Yeah.
Which, if they made that a film, the ball...
Just do it.
To sum it up simply, what if Superman's ship crashed to Earth 12 hours earlier and he landed in a communist Russian field?
Do it. Why is that not something that isn't in the works already?
So there's been, you know, Ubermensch, so the fascist Nazi version of Superman and this sort of stuff, but Red Son works. It's got Batman as, you know...
With the hat?
Oh, the comrade. Yeah,
the comrade hat just with little spiky bits.
Nice.
That's the only Batman.
Which he wears in Superman versus Batman
in the
flashback
dream.
Scene.
Does he?
Yeah, and when like in Justice League, one of the scenes they cut out was... Cyborg was having flashbacks, and he went back to where you saw in Wonder Woman. You saw the bad guys with the mother box. Sure. That's actually Pierce. So you see him with that. And you see him actually see Batman with all that gear on and stuff. So he's seeing this universe, whatever it is. And I think DC are actually leading up to Flashpoint Paradox. I think that's what they're doing, because we've seen that already start to happen. And that's an amazing story arc where everything changes. And maybe that's a thing that Marvel would do as well, this Flashpoint Paradox style thing.
They did Flashpoint on The Flash on the TV show.
They?
And it lasted 1.5 episodes before they went back.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they could have done a lot
more.
They got
scared, didn't they?
Mm. Oh, that's such a shame.
Mm, they chickened out big time.
Well, years ago in the X-Men universe, they had
Age of Apocalypse?
Yeah, Age of Apocalypse.
That was my first big event comic. That's the thing that got me addicted to weeklies.
It was huge. And Marvel had an incredible infight inside the organization because it was so popular, this idea where, you know, the good guys, bad guys, and bad guys, and all the allegiances were changed.
Yeah, right.
Everything was changed. And there was such a fight inside, editorial inside Marvel, they wanted to stick with it. They were going to just throw away the X-Men universe and stay in what Days of whatever it was called. But yes, anyway, so they're going to stay there. And then they just went, actually, look, let's not. And they didn't. But it was so close to throwing away, you know, 20, 30 years of back history to stick with this universe.
And they've been really clever. So they had a team called Exiles, which was team people exiled from their own reality, going through other realities to fix things.
I think Blink was in that, wasn't
Blink
she?
Was the main character. And then they took Sabretooth as well. And Sabretooth was that universe's version of Wolverine.
Yeah, right.
In Age of Apocalypse, Wolverine has one hand.
Yep.
Yeah.
The other one had gotten blasted off by Cyclops, who's a really bad guy.
That's got to hurt.
With his brother, Quicksilver.
Magneto is the leader of the X-Men.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great...
So it's really good. But they've brought it back a bunch of times. Yeah. They've done another Age of Apocalypse series. I would love for the films to go that direction, especially the X-Men ones. If you were going to reboot the X-Men again, and
which
they've
you
done
could,
that, because they've done it already. But if they were... Because this merger with Fox and Disney is going to happen and go, they won't get access to those characters for a few years. But if you wanted to finish off the X-Men universe on a bang, doing Age of Apocalypse and then the reset at the end of that is a great way that you could fold them into the current Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, really they have nothing to lose with the X-Men franchise, let's be honest. I mean, really, the X-Men franchise is all but dead. The last one was all right. The one before that was okay. But, personally. But really, it's dead.
I'm hanging for New Mutants. I don't know if you saw the trailer for that.
No, I didn't see that. No.
It's a straight-up horror movie.
Oh, cool.
It's kids with powers locked in an asylum.
Okay.
They're doing a ton of reshoots, reportedly, because they're going to add Warlock, which makes me happy, because how you can do New Mutants... Warlock is really hard to describe, but he's an alien robot that changes form. He can attach himself to people.
It's techno-organic, effectively.
That's it. And he's paired up with one of the worst X-Men ever, a guy whose name is Doug. Douglas, if he's formal.
Okay.
His power is that he... Doug Ramsey. He can understand and translate any language.
So he's C-3PO.
Basically.
Okay.
He does end up being very handy of working with computers and this sort of stuff, because he can do binary.
So he's R2-D2.
Yeah, he's a bit of the mix of two. Anyway, he dies very quickly because his powers are shit. And Warlock...
It's a joke, too. Like, they...
They make fun of it.
Not necessarily powers. They're learnt skills.
Warlock is so bummed out about it, this robot, that he digs the body up and takes over that body and becomes Douglock.
That doesn't sound gross or zombie-like.
It's really weird. But do you know what happened? What? Comics.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Do we want to have a quiz?
Oh, I think we should.
This one is non-comic related. It's television related. I was trying to do like a to be or not to be kind of title, to spin or not to spin. That is the question. Was it a spin-off or is it a super original TV idea?
Ooh. Okay.
The Simpsons.
That was a spin-off from the Tracy Ullman show.
Got it right. What about this one, Mork and Mindy?
Yeah, that was a spin-off of Happy Days.
Nice. What about Cheers?
Oh, yeah, now.
No, Frasier was a spin-off of Cheers.
Ha-ha, yes, you got me. Trying to be tricky.
Nice.
Because there was a spin-off for sure. Melrose Place.
Yes, it was 90210. Mm-hmm.
Really?
It was. Kelly Taylor was in the first episode of Melrose Place.
was very spurious. It was very spurious.
And some guy from Melrose Place was in Beverly Hills being a carpenter or something.
I know about, is it Brandon, the guy you like?
Brandon Walsh, yes.
Yeah. I was too young. I didn't catch
Jason Priestley.
He's done actually some cool stuff.
He's done some really good stuff.
He does not take himself seriously.
Not at all.
Have you seen Domino, which hasn't aged well as a film?
But oh, Keira Knightley.
Yeah. So he's in that. So the the two guys. So Iron Ziering, not Ian, Iron. Iron Ziering.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he calls himself. It's his name.
Steve Sanders, thank you very much.
So Iron Ziering and Jason Priestley. Not Jason Priestley.
Is it Luke Perry?
No, it's one of the other ones. Anyway,
Byron Austin Green.
None of those guys take themselves particularly seriously, and I think that's fantastic. Mm. Anyway, back to you, sorry.
And Melrose Place, funnily enough, had a spin-off, the name of which I can't remember.
Yes, it was something Malibu, something or other.
It was about models.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it had...
it had an Aussie in it.
It did, and it also had... I think Nicole Eggert might have been in it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
From Baywatch.
Yes.
Mm. She was sort of like the Pamela Anderson... replacement.
Okay. She went with Corey Haim for years.
Did she really? Mm. Not towards the end, though, I would think.
No.
Okay. Laverne and Shirley.
Wasn't that a Happy Days spin-off?
They also had Joni and Chachi.
Yeah, sure.
There were a lot of spin-offs from Happy Days. Finally, Rugrats.
I don't think it was.
It wasn't. It had a couple. It had Angelica and Susie's Preschool Days.
Yes, I remember
all
that.
All Grown Up.
Yep.
And Tales from the Crib.
I haven't seen Tales from the Crib, but All Grown Up I remember, where they were teenagers.
Yeah, not Rugrats anymore.
Chucky was still a dork.
Isn't there this whole conspiracy theory about the kids and Rugrats growing up to be the kids in Captain Planet?
What was that?
Yeah.
Or something like that. There's some way that they grow up and go into something else.
Look, if you remember, just let us know on Facebook. Yeah. We are the Watchers. That'd be great. That's going to do it for us. Awesome episode. Abe, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you very much for your time and for your time.
It was awesome. It was a wonderful record.
And Tom?
Yeah.